Yes, Your Honor, that's the night before Yom Tov. So for women, you know. Then after midway in 20, it's just last two chapters are easy. So let's see. Are we having that kiddush on Yom Tov?
The 11th, the 12th, and the 18th.
So you have sponsors?
No.
No, I don't.
Not a one?
One. And I wasn't going to get one for the 12th, but we
Bastards again. The highest sphira in the lowest element of soul, that is the keser, right? It attaches itself to the lowest level of the element on top, which is the malchut, right? And that enables the process of tshuva to take place. So I'll paraphrase that, which with the top paragraph, just to keep us on the track here. So what happens now if a person has done sins which would bring the person's nefesh, the lowest level, to a state of kares, to being cut off, right? So what do we say? What happens? What gets cut off at the kares? What gets cut off from the nefesh?
The nine levels.
The nine lowest levels of the nefesh get cut off, right? The highest level of the nefesh doesn't get cut off. Why? Because it's really part of the ruach. It's really part of the ruach. Which no kares happens over there. And therefore, that becomes an area in which that area of nefesh can now reach a higher level, connect a higher level that's been untouched, and can be nurtured from that area. And how does it become nurtured? With a very wholesome experience in the ruach level, which is what experience?
Vidui.
The experience of vidui, of the confession. The confession is that healthy experience. And that is an experience that is shared with this highest level of nefesh, and through that process now the nefesh can now reconnect the other nine levels with it. That's the last thing he said, the last line in that paragraph, right? By the fact that now that through the ruach that highest level of nefesh that highest level of nefesh is now nurturing from there. So now the nine other levels below can now become connected as they were before. That's what he said. Okay. So now we left off last week. Well, that's all good and well with the nefesh level. So now what happens if something happens in the ruach level? Right. How are things going to work then? So now we're at the bottom of the page. Okay, and similarly, in pogam the kilkel chas v'sholom v'chinas hadibur shalom. What if the person, God forbid, flaws and damages the level of one's speech? Al yedei avonos hatluyim v'dibur, with sins that are dependent on speech. For example, v'lashon hara u'kiyaseh, with speaking evil or similarly evil speech-orientated things. O she'erei avonos. Or there are other averos that are not necessarily specifically speech, but they are also related to the ruach. It doesn't tell you what it is, but let's say, for example, one of them could be arrogance. Arrogance has a lot to do with the ruach for the person. That ruach is that stamina, and you think more of yourself. That's also from ruach. Others say as well, it's when one willfully does not study Torah and when one can study Torah. So there's other elements, but to keep it simple, the speech area certainly does. And therefore what happens? Now you are damaging your part of soul that's called Ruach. Now why is he saying damaging? So look at the brackets. We know the Ruach cannot get Kares. You can't get Kares cut off in your Ruach. Why? The Torah only mentions the concept of kares by the nefesh. Now he quotes verses. The verses say, the nechresa hanefesh ahi. The nefesh gets cut off. The nechresu hanefashos also. The souls that do get cut off. We don't find any kares for activities beyond the nefesh level. It's level of action. You don't find kares for talking Lashon Hara. You don't get kares for that. All the kares things come from actions. right? Forbidden relations, okay? Eating chametz on Pesach, things like that. Okay, those are activity orientated. That's what kareis seems to be connected with. And there's the ability for kareis. But things with speech don't seem to, Torah never records kareis in that capacity. So there's no concept of kareis there.
And that entails the use of verbal musculature and physical way.
But that's not enough. That's not the main thing of what speech is all about. It really is ruach. It's 99% ruach. Okay, so that's what's mostly being affected there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So therefore there's no kareis over there. So it goes on, it's continuing, Kiyotze Harbe, and as many situations like that. And then he brings a bunch of sources. Okay. Now, Im calls that, but still, although there's no kareis, but the sins that are rooted in and connected to the level of ruach, if you do that, you flaw that element of your soul. And now you strengthen forces of impurity to attach themselves to that level of ruach. So you're damaging it. So that's no good. So how are you going to correct the damage, the insensitivity that now is in the level of ruach? What are you going to do to correct that? So it's the same formula. You've got to go to the level above. It's the same idea. Although the ruach can be damaged, but what part is not going to be damaged? Right, the keser of ruach, the highest of ruach, will not be damaged because it is connected to the malchut of neshama. Right, so that part is not damaged. So therefore, after the bracket, so mitzad shabachina. So let me go back to the bracket here. So now, so mitzad shabachina hal yona. So now the highest level. So keser shalom, right? The mystical secret of its keser. Kosher v'dovak lo oilam v'vachina taftona shalom neshama kinistel el. It's always cleaving and attached to the lowest level of neshama. Kuf nun lamed stands for kan nifkar la'el, as mentioned before. Okay, whenever you have a canal. Kuf nun lamed kinistel la'el, as mentioned before. So now, that part hasn't been damaged, so what does it do? It can now be corrected through attaching itself to the higher level of neshama. And what are you going to do? What's the neshama good for doing for you? What's the neshama do for us? Thought. So now what are you going to think? Behurhure tshuva, with thoughts of tshuva, b'machsheva salev, with the thoughts of the heart, which is really where the ruach is, but it's the highest part of the ruach, which is already the level of neshama. So this thought of tshuva awakens the neshama to revitalize the ruach part that it is connected to. Now that part will now be able to infiltrate to the rest of the levels of ruach as well because of the connection that's there. Okay? Now,
well, the interface seems to be very important.
You couldn't, it's just critical.
In other words, you couldn't go from the shama all the way up to, let's say, the keter of the ruach, the source salt. You got to go down to the lower level, the malchut ruach, in order to get at that interface. You couldn't just jump up to the...
Well, shama. We're going to see what's going to... Wait till chapter 20. A lot more fun happens. He's just giving you an abridged version now. Chapter 20 gives you a more elaborate version. There's more things happening over here. But right now, the critical point is the area that is sick, that part of the soul, has to have a connection to the higher level. That's immediately above it. It has to be connected by it to revitalize the lower level. But that's not the end of the story. But for right now, it's enough. That's enough for at this point. In two chapters, we'll give you more detail. But you're on to something there. What you're thinking has some validity, so just hang on there. Yeah?
Is there any possibility to... I'll tell the ruach, but have the nefesh still okay? Or it must
no.
be...
No, okay, then chapter 20 is going to tell you. Okay. Inevitably, what has to happen? If the nefesh, if the ruach has been damaged, what must happen?
The
ruach, remember we said one level, the higher level is like a soul to the lower level, right? So if the higher level is hurt, it has to impact on the lower level, because that's what's feeding into it. Okay, so there'll be an insensitive, that won't be correct to the nefesh, because nefesh is connected to ruach, okay? But it definitely is going to be negatively affected.
You know, that's true. If your spirit is down, you know, just think of it simply. If you don't have any spirit, you don't have motivation, you don't have that resiliency, right? So then your body acts lethargically. You know, so that, I mean, you can understand on a simple, if you're in a bad mood, right? You know, you've hurt your ruach. Right? You've hurt your ruach. You spoke lashon hara. You've damaged your ruach. It puts you in a certain frame of mood. Now you got that mood, so now go start doing mitzvahs. Okay, so you may still do the mitzvahs. Okay, and the nefesh aspect, yes, I put on my tefillin, I make my challahs for Shabbos, right? Yeah, but I do it like, you know what I mean? Like it's, so there's a damage there. Even in the how you do the action is going to be damaged. Right? That's the point. He doesn't say it now, but he says in chapter 20. Okay, he's just giving you the thumbnail sketch now. But the idea, okay, so that's how it works on two levels. Now something interesting happens on the third level. Now what's the next step? What's the next thing you can damage? Neshama. So what do you do to damage it? You got to think bad thoughts, right? So this is where it doesn't exactly follow for a very important reason. Last paragraph of the chapter. Aval b'chinas ha-neshama, but the level neshama, eina nifgemes klal la'olam, is never, ever flawed. Why? Because first of all, ki mekor sharasha, because its root that it comes from, humeyolam ha-neshumar, it's from a world that is very much protected, mimagazorim, from the touch of quote-unquote strangers. U'devuka le'olam kisharesh ha-neshama, and it is always connected to it, to the fourth level, which is Shorash Hashem, the root soul. Mm-hmm. Yadua, because it's known mystically, okay, Shehem Reim, the Lomi Sparshim Omi, that the Neshama and the Shorash HaNeshama, that's the fourth level of soul, or the Knesset Soul, whatever you want to call that fourth level of soul, many names for it, those two, the Neshama and the Shorash HaNeshama, are bound like lovers that never separate from each other. Okay, now he hasn't done a lot of talk about Shorash Neshama. He's not going to really do a lot in this gate. Okay, but it's very bound. Now remember what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. The Neshama really is not internal to the person. Mm-hmm. Remember we said that?
Yeah. I thought you said it's never ever flawed.
Right, the Neshama, the Neshama.
So when you said the damage is...
Oh, I started off saying that, and I led you on, and then I said that's not what happened. Right, I was leading you on because you figured that would be the natural step, and you all went along with it. Except I saw a couple of dissenting phrases there, but that's not what happened. That's what he's saying. It can't, because it's very much connected to the Shorash HaNeshama, which is way, way beyond the person over there.
That's why bad thoughts are not considered so much a thing. You have to do
oh, no,
the
no,
best.
No, it's still a terrible okay. thing. It's still a terrible thing. But the idea is that it's not. Is it not, it affects you, but doesn't affect your neshama.
So
let's just finish with it. Well, we didn't say anything about it needing tikkun, did we?
No.
Never said it, did we?
No, again.
And many, many weeks ago,
what?
Probably like October, uh-huh. you observed there was a machlokas when a Jew has a bad thought.
The thought will present an aura. That's a different
right.
thing. An aura will come around you. That's a different story. It's going to be around you, but your neshama will be freed from that. Now you can wreak havoc with you, but not with your neshama. I mean, you're putting tons of garbage into yourself, and it's going to affect you, but not your neshama.
Okay, you need a body and a ruach.
Lower level. Yeah, whatever's left inside you, or just puts in more garbage instead of ruach filtering in. No, it's instead of the neshama sustaining you, it's a piece of garbage sustaining you. Okay, and that's affecting your ruach and it's affecting your neshama. You're drawing from forces of negativity instead. Okay, so the ein maaseh ha'adam. So now what's happening? So in other words, there's no concept of flaw. Certainly by the Shorash Neshama, okay? And since the Neshama is totally connected to the Shorash Neshama, it can't be affected by sin either.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it do? So he says, The actions of man can't reach it to hurt it, God forbid. What happens? So what does happen? The person sins by thinking improperly. He only causes that to himself. Remember, what's the most you ever get from the neshama inside of yourself? Just the sparks. You only get the sparks that come to you. The neshama is outside of you. It's outside of you. It's a proximity, but it's outside. Sparks off into you. Okay, which is the highest levels of ruach. Sparks into there, and you feel in the ruach that connection of neshama. Right? So now what happens, what you cause, is those sparks fly away. Right? That's the nature. They're too spiritual to stay where there's polluted thoughts. So they just fly away. But not, God forbid, that it gets damaged at all. So therefore, the damage is rather one of a greater distance between the beneficiary, you, and the benefactor, which is the neshama. Okay, that life force, right, and that which is sustained by that life force is now a greater distance as occurred by your evil thoughts. But no damage happens in the neshama at all.
Yesterday, we were talking about the soul body that taught you.
Yeah.
And somebody asked a question about where the eye resides, and you said, fundamentally, the soul. So the soul that you're talking about here, in the aggregate sense, would be all of the levels, but together, but you can break it up into pieces.
That's right. So yesterday was just a general discussion. Yeah. General discussion. The soul, all of those souls are your ultimate you.
Yeah.
The ultimate, there's parts of the ultimate you that aren't affected at all. That aren't affected at all, but then you can become oblivious to them as well. Be oblivious to yourself, which is not very good. Okay. So that's the idea here. So to recap. So on the lowest level of nefesh, you can cause kares. It could be cut off from the soul. Too mystical, huh?
No.
Oh, were you able to listen to the tape last week? Okay. So the lowest level of nefesh gets cut off. The only way it can be brought back is because, thank God, one part of the nefesh is still connected to the ruach. And when you do vidui, and you exercise a healthy environment of ruach, that aspect of nefesh is revitalized and is able to connect the rest of the nefesh. You do something wrong the ruach level, what has to happen? The ruach gets flawed, but there's no cutting off. And therefore, the ruach has to dip itself into the higher level of neshama. Through what? Through what the neshama is capable of giving you. Good thoughts. Thoughts of tshuva. And that dips that element, the highest element of ruach, be affected, and then it's able to nurture the rest of the ruach as well. Alright? But when you wreck up things that pertain to the neshama level, and you have bad thoughts, you can't hurt the neshama, but rather what happens, the neshama escapes. The spark leaves, and it goes to its repository, hovering further beyond you. And the neshama never gets hurt. Okay, remember, this is all part of all, so many tie-ins to why tshuva is always there, because your greater parts never really get damaged. Now you're going to have to reconnect to them. Okay, but see, now you might ask, so why isn't that called kares? Okay, because nothing really has happened. It's not connected. You see, because the whole connection is a different type of connection, right? It's a different. It's not an internal connection to begin with, right? So there, it's there. Okay. However, those links work. Now, obviously, this, when we talk about links, we get too many three-dimensional ideas here. And when you're dealing with a soul, it's not bound by three-dimensional. So the parables can only help so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not like the links are broken. But the just the distance is greater. It is always external. Question is, how much closer is it? So now it's moved further away. So it's never hurt. It's never cut off from the entire field. Right? Even when it's linked, okay, it's still external. That's the whole point. Even when it's linked, okay, I can't, in physical ways you can't explain this.
Maybe you're never cut off in the axis. With the other ones, you're more like cut off. In some way. I mean, you know, more mechanical.
The axis is always there, it's just further away. You know, the link is there, but it's so far stretched off. You know, it's like a long link. Right? There is a link, right? That point where it rams into the ruach. Right? That's the link, right? But the bulk of it can be very close. or to be very far. So now it just gets further away.
It's hard. I don't physically. You can't demonstrate.
How would you still take the spirit kind of care?
What?
You could still make your
argument. No, because it's there. It's not suffering any clarity.
But your ability to sort of use it for downstream positive effect is diminished.
You can't use it, but it's still there though. It's there, it's just not active. But by nefesh, it's out of the picture. There's nothing there that can help it. Even let's say now you're going to think to do good things, even if everything else above is intact, nothing's going to get in there. Nothing's going to get in there. Okay, it's a difficult concept. It's a difficult concept.
If you can affect your neshama, or you can't affect it in a negative way, so you can't do any damage to it. Can you affect it in a positive way?
Sure.
Win-win.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. You can never hurt it; you can only help it. But you could be very much
something to it.
Only when you're doing positive things do you bring more sparks into you. You gain more access to it, or you can get strengthened. But if it smells any problems, it's out of there. It's out of there. It can never be damaged.
Obviously, you have to build on it. So that's what you're saying. Like, it's only that. I mean, it could be.
It could be made strengthened from previous activities, and now you've done things, so it flees away. But you can always bring it back. You can always bring it back. Okay, so that's the general 3 points. Now, there's an interesting thing I saw that really isn't 100% on topic, but I saw in one of these books that brings it down over here, so we'll talk about it. We did mention a little bit about the Shoresh and Neshama, the root of the Neshama. So one of the commentaries explains that is that part within the Jew that ultimately wants to do the will of God. That part that wants to do the will of God. And this, for example, will strengthen a Jew not to give up his Yiddishkeit. She says, let's say, for example, a person does many sins. A person with a lot of sins. You know, can you commit some Pesach, you commit adultery and all these things, right? But you take that Jew and you say now, you know, during the Crusades, during the Inquisition, either you give up your Judaism or we'll kill you. And that same Jew will give up his life. Right? Although he really doesn't keep much of the Torah. There's a phenomena that the Jew will give up his life. Right? So how does that work? So number one, he says, because the fact that the person does many averos, he doesn't feel that the contradiction to his Yiddishkeit. And the person says, I'm a Jew. I'm a weak Jew. You know, I'm a Jew, but it's a little bit too demanding to live. I believe it's a good religion. I believe that the God is something we should be involved with, but I can cheat in business and I can eat treif and I don't have to keep Shabbos and I'm still a Jew. But a lot of people don't see any contradiction in that, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm a sinner, but I'm still a good Jew. But when they say now you have to worship idolatry, when you have to say give up your Judaism, that person now says, that's a contradiction to me being a Jew. Okay, that I can be everything else and still be a Jew. But to say I don't believe in God, well, I can't be a Jew. That's a contradiction to being a Jew. And that's where the Shoresh and the Shama, which is that ultimate will that you want to be a Jew. Okay, that he wants to do the ultimate will of God. And not being contradiction, that is the Shoresh and the Shama. That's what we tap into. That's the reservoir we tap into that keeps us from going off the path. That's his going off the path. Now, then he says another interesting point. He says like this, specifically about specifically about the concept in the Spanish Inquisition, where we saw an interesting phenomenon. The phenomenon, and maybe this will explain a little bit of the expanded assimilation rates we have nowadays as well. We've got such a shortage in the show, why are so many Jews intermarrying out of the faith? What happened to this idea? Doesn't everybody have a Shoresh Neshama? So what's happening? So he says, well, if you look what happened in the Spanish Inquisition, he says that there were two types of Jews. There were Jews who were involved very much in philosophies, you know, kind of dabbled all to the secular philosophies, and when it came time to push come to shove, they gave up their religion. They were not willing to give up their lives to sanctify God's name. And it was the simple Jews, the quote-unquote simple Jews, who didn't dabble in philosophy. They were the regular Jews. They went to shul, maybe weren't so scholarly, but they did the will of God, right? Or even if they were sinners, but they still weren't big philosophers. And they willingly gave their lives up for God. How do you explain that? How do you explain it? So he says like this. He says, even though the simple Jews, and they weren't the big philosophers, and they didn't even maybe do so much Torah and mitzvahs, right? But still, they could be impacted by their root soul to not give up their Judaism. They could still be impacted, as we explained before. But those people who their minds became corrupted with all these kinds of philosophies, all right, then the Shorash and Neshama has no place to impact. Because where is the Shorash Neshama, where is it going to hit finally? It goes through the Neshama and it's going to go where? It wants to hit your mind. But the problem is, your mind, you messed up your mind with these crazy philosophies. Now the mind is not a fertile territory to pick up this concept. Right? As we go through the system, right, Shorash Neshama to Neshama, Neshama is sparks into the mind. Right? That's the connecting point. And at that point, it's your mind that says, listen, you may have been a terrible Jew all your life. You may have sinned and sinned and sinned, but come on, think for one second. You really want to give up Judaism? So the person who is the low sinner, you know, he gets drunk and does these things and does sins of action, knew, okay, but his mind hasn't been polluted yet. So therefore, when the mind, the Shor HaShemah comes into the mind, it says, what are you doing? God says, you know, you're right, I can't give up my Judaism. The mind was fertile for the true concept, so they wouldn't give it up, right? They never damaged the receptacle to take in the message that would come from the Shorash Neshama. But someone whose mind was constantly involved in false philosophies, so now the root soul step nowhere. When the idea comes in, he says, what are you talking about? It's not logical. And it wasn't able to impact. That's the explanation that is from the Vilna Gaon, this explanation. So you could say this is why we have so much assimilation nowadays, because we're so smart. Because it's the enlightenment, right? Rational man. So we used our minds so much, we polluted our thought processes so much. So now when the Shama wants to say something, it's got no place to be heard.
Yeah, but we have a lot of Bali Chuma on the other hand.
Okay, you do. You do. I mean, there's other factors that can get impacted. There are reasons why that's happening, but clearly you can see why some people are assimilating. It's that factor is causing the assimilation more than anything else. You think the Shama should hold them back, and it's not able to hold them back because their minds are not willing to listen anymore. It's not a fertile territory to them.
Speaking from
that's what the Gross says. Yeah.
Speaking from personal experience, but also from you know, the questions about the other Balei Tshuva, there's always been a spark. It wasn't me, always a spark, you know, waiting to be lit. Whereas speaking to other people who are also Jews who, you know, I try to expose, you know, to some of the influences I've had, there doesn't seem to be a spark there, you know, nothing you say to them can even get them interested. You know, I'm just not interested. I mean, what would this be? I mean, I can't see
the ones that are interested.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see their minds are so messed up with modern philosophy or anything.
Why not? Why would you say that?
Well, my mind was messed up with modern philosophy, you know. And, but as I say, there was
so you're fortunate, and see, this is the point. You're fortunate. See, this is the idea. When you intermarry, you happen to have the bad fortune that you statistically ran into a nice, not Jewish person, right? So now, I mean, what reason should I see a Jew for? Right? So the Baal Tshuva is lucky that either that hasn't happened yet, right? Or they get a real healthy exposure to some Torah, which we'll see in the next chapter. We'll see that's a very important thing. If you're fortunate enough to get a good dose of Torah, that is capable of knocking out, of cleaning up a little area for you to be able to clean up the mind a little bit.
think that's probably closer to the truth, rather than the fact that they had a higher intellect at that time. I just think it's that they don't have the exposure to Torah, and so they don't know, and they have exposure to the other philosophies, and they make sense, and so then they make their choices.
Well, we all have that. I think really what I hear you saying, if you correct me if I'm wrong, is that we all have that spark or that little pilot light. It might be given certain input that causes it to rise up higher at different times. And obviously, the ones who are more fortunate, obviously, anybody just who's here, not that we're any greater or any better, but obviously, we've had some more input to turn that pilot light up. But the spark is always there, am I correct? You know, you said we can't really lose it.
It's there. No, it's always there. Everyone has
the
shoshana shamas.
The pencil of yud that everybody has.
But the question is, when it gets awakened, are you listening to it?
Well,
are you ready to listen to it?
That's
Does anybody have the same five spark? Are some souls more free to
go? Some people have greater shoshana shamas.
So then some of the sparks... So if everybody has a spark, some people might have very tiny sparks and they're deeper or harder to reach, and other people might have larger sparks that are ignited more easily.
Yeah, but you still have to have a receptacle to be willing to catch. The pilot light has to catch onto something. If there's some gas, you have to have something there. No matter how big the spark is, if you don't have any gas, nothing's going to catch.
Some people have maybe a smaller spark.
The people who have the spark, you know, they don't seem to be a tall philosopher, you know, philosopher or anything, but if they're interested, their reaction is, I'm not interested, please don't talk to me. And yet there are other people who maybe are not philosophers at all.
Because their mind is turning up the gas coming in.
And they need the tiniest nudge, and, you know, and you can see the pilot light being lit, you know?
But maybe they're not...
That this is inbuilt, but maybe the spark didn't.
But maybe they're not interested, because it means if they're interested, they'll have to keep mitzvot, which is not so easy to do when you are, you know, you start. And maybe that's the reason, not because deep inside they're not interested. They don't want to be forced into it.
I'm just reacting.
The question is, are they going to intermarry? Where are you going to find greater instances of intermarriage? That's what I'm saying. Is it going to be more with the person who's more the philosopher or not? So the Gros maintaining the philosopher will intermarry quicker.
The Brahmas have a deeper notion in mind, though, in that I suspect that people don't elect to be able to accept or reject these issues at all. I think that what they may be aware of a contradiction within themselves, but they're so immersed.
Or even better.
And
you know,
yeah,
that's the point. That's the point. It could be now when you intermarry, you don't even feel to be a contradiction to Judaism, maybe.
And the Canadian Jews have
the ethnicity.
Yeah, 43%. Are they the philosophers?
No, so it could say, it's a step further now. It could be A, the philosophers. It could be A, they don't feel that intermarrying is a contradiction to Judaism anymore.
I think they're not aware of Judaism.
In other words, if you went to the people intermarried and say, we want you to give up your Judaism, there could still be many who won't. What do you mean? I'm a Jew. But you intermarried. So what? I'm still. In other words, they don't feel that to be the contradiction anymore. That, I think, is the shot.
The leaders are saying it, doesn't it?
You're not the big thinker. That shows you how, now that you're saying it, how bad times are now. You know what I'm saying? You know, it used to be 100 years ago, if you intermarried, that was a contradiction to Judaism. That was like bowing down to the cross.
Because many of them consider themselves.
But now, because the non-Jewish world is so close with us, we don't even feel that to be the contradiction. So it's not even the philosophical resistance anymore.
No, so we term the cardiac Jew because of the fact that I'm a Jew at heart, you know, which means that I'm still a Jew no matter what. Right? I'm a good person, I'm kind, I believe in humanitarianism, I believe in all these other things, so therefore, you know, why am I any different than you?
Peter,
and
I think that's the answer. Yeah. They don't view that as the contradiction.
They're good and...
Yeah. They don't want to, if they had to defend themselves, obviously they might not do it.
I think that's the better answer. Yeah, you think that's correct, Peter?
Well, I'm just reacting to what we're learning here, which is that the Spanish Inquisition, that those the simple Jews versus the philosopher Jews, and I just don't see it in today's.
That's why I'm saying. In today, you're not expected to bow down to the cross, right? So the comparison of trying to say intermarriage, it's not really a fair comparison.
We don't have a test at all today, do we, in fact? We don't have anything. I mean, at what stage would you say to even an intermarried Jew, you're no longer a Jew, you know? I mean, because we've said all the wrong.
That's what you have. You have all these people who still think they're really Jews when they're halakhically not.
Are they by intermarrying?
No, well, not their children.
Children.
But they feel they're good Jews. They feel they're good Jews, although they intermarried. Yeah, they send their kids to Hebrew school.
Right up to the end, right up to the day of their death.
They think
they're entitled to do tshuva and come return, because they never stop being Jews.
Yeah, but they don't realize there's anything wrong with it.
Here's a short difference. My Rebbe told me this once. He just reminded me. He says, so why in the Chumash, when they talk about non-kosher animals, specifically is it the pig and the camel? This is very important.
The pig and the...
The pig and the camel, the jamal, right?
Yeah.
Why? Because a pig looks Jewish but isn't inside. A camel doesn't look Jewish but thinks it is inside. And right now we live in the jamal generation, where we don't look like Jews on the outside, but we think we're Jews on the inside.
Okay, good.
So that's your point.
Okay, right, let's go on to the next chapter. Okay, Perek Yutes.
Like, why those two animals specifically? Right. Why not another animal?
But there's, like but there's two more.
Well,
you gotta go. Yeah, Nevitz, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
so never went on.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so now what he's gonna do in chapter 19, he's gonna first give a very nice interpretation of a verse based on this. Then he's going to tell you everything we just told you on the micro level within the human being. All this happens on the macro level in terms of God's relationship with this world. So it's just coming back to that. You know, whatever happens in man's level, that happens on the godly level. And then he's going to close off by giving us an interpretation back to the ladder of Yaakov, which we had an interpretation way in the beginning. He's going to give a further interpretation based on that. Okay, so let's see how far we go. I'd really like to finish it, but I don't know. Okay, Zeo Inyakos, this is what it says in Mishlei. Maybe we'll cut out some commentary and just blitz a little bit. Where the verse says in Mishlei, Ruach Ish Yechalkel Machalehu, the spirit of a man sustains a person during his illness, Ruach Necheya Mi Yisaenu, and a person of a broken spirit, who can bear him? So what does the verse mean simply? Simply it means if a person's got a good spirit, it can affect his medical health. Hey, Ruach Ish, you got a good spirit, you chalkel, it can sustain you. Even if you have a very bad illness, if you have a good spirit, you can maybe kriech out of it, you know, you can make it. Right? And all, you know, the medical field is beginning to see some support to that idea. But Ruach Necheya, but if someone's in depression, can also affect your medical health. That's the simple meaning that King Solomon said long ago. But now, on the mystical level, based on what we've just learned, the verse has a much more profound meaning. The meaning goes like this. Ratzal Leimer, meaning to say, Hamachalo, v'chelef ha'avon, the sickness of the spiritual sickness that comes from the sins that a person does, shall bechinas ha-nefesh, that really mostly manifests itself on the nefesh level. Why? Shestam rov avonos mitzuyas bechinas ha-nefesh. Most sins are found on the nefesh level. Shiatachtona krova la sitra achar. It's the lowest level, closest to the satan. As the verse says, raglel yordes mavis, the feet going down to death. It's the bottom aspect of man. It's the first part to be ensnared by sin. So when we talk about a person being sick, spiritually, most often it's at the nefesh level is where you're sick. Okay? Now, such a being, okay, again, like the majority of things we do wrong really only affect the lowest level of our spiritual abilities. Most of the things we do wrong are more often than not thoughtless. A lot of people, you know, a lot of Jews, they eat trafe and they don't even think it's wrong, right? So how much thought are they doing when they're eating trafe every day? There's no thought at all. There's no speech. They're just doing it. Right? Most of the averis we do, you know, we're not even engaged in the power of speech. Of course, there is lashon hara. I'm not saying there isn't. But most averis are done in action. And most actions we do, we don't even think we're doing it. We don't even think that, you know, we don't think to do wrong. We're just doing it. Just in these habits of doing the wrong things. So it's not really a high falutin, sophisticated type of sins. So most of the sins are on the lower nefesh level. Generality. I'm not saying there aren't others, but most go through your day. Most of the day you're not thinking. You're just doing things wrong without thinking, without talking about it. So that's the sick part of the being. It's usually going to be the nefesh is the sick part. Okay. So now what happens? Okay, so going on to the next page now. Because it says v'nechesh kisechet, when the soul sins. What? Another verse. Hakatoyim o'elu v'nafshosam. These transgressors, they're transgressing against their own souls. Again, always back to the nefesh. When we're talking about sickness, spiritual sickness is usually referred to the nefesh. Ayin Eitzachayim, Shar HaKudim, Sofer Kefer, Yitzchayim, etc., etc. Anyway, end of the third line. So then, what are we doing for a sick soul? Yecholahin lehitzaken, it can be fixed up. The gam lo'alos, I'm even to be elevated. How? Al yidei b'chinas haruach kinitzgaleel. Through the level of ruach. So read the verse again now, the verse we started the chapter with. Ruach ish yechal kel machaleyu. Because a person has a ruach, a second level of soul, that will sustain the illness of the nefesh in the person. That's what the verse means. Okay? Since the ruach isn't involved in those wrongdoings and it's healthy, it can sustain the nefesh through its sickness and bring it back. That's what the verse means. Ah, right? So right away, you know, it's very interesting here. Reb Chaim in this deeper meaning, you know, he's trying. Reb Chaim's got his agenda. He's trying to show you the connection of ruach and nefesh. He wants to show you everything we're saying fits into this concept in the verse. But obviously, what's the assumption he's making over here? That just as we can understand a sick person on a physical level cannot function properly or as properly as a healthy person. Similar in the spiritual sense, it's the same thing. It's not like I wronged God and he gets me back tit for tat. It doesn't work that way. The issue has to be understood like a sick person. A sick person, quite often, you make yourself sick. I'm not saying when you're not, but the majority, the Rambam says it, the majority of sicknesses that we have are our own fault. The lifestyles we lead, you know, we overeat and we're overweight and we're overstressed and we don't follow the nice path of taking care of ourselves. So if we don't take care of our bodies, it's not a punishment. We've just hurt ourselves. It's a natural reaction. It's not so much something external that come in. Yeah? How do you know?
You hear it.
The thing clicks up. You're right. Thank you. You're taping? Your tape's good? Your tape's good? Okay, I'm going to make a copy of yours. Okay. Thanks. That's okay. Good. Thanks. Good. So, right? So that's a natural result of the person not being well, is you can't do things. And what happens now that you're sick? You can't walk, can't run anymore. You can't do these things. Why? Because you're sick. That's the natural result of what's happening there. So spiritually the same thing. In other words, physically you have certain talents, but because you abused yourself, you don't have those talents anymore. Not that they didn't exist. They were there. And the truth is maybe if you'll get back on a fitness program and rehabilitation, you can get back your physical talents. Right? So that's why he's doing the same thing with the idea of the spirit. You've got many spiritual potentials. You're not living up to those abilities. And therefore you have to view your inability to function isn't because you never had those abilities. Those abilities were there. You've got them. But now they're temporarily incapacitated. Right? So that's a very important idea over here. There's always spiritual abilities that the person has, and you can really pull out of that sick situation, but as long as you're not, you have brought the sickness, and therefore you're not going to be capable to produce certain spiritual results, just as the sick person can't do. So very comparable to the actual way a sickness works within a person. The same way the spiritual sickness is there. So that's the first point he's telling us over here. But now he gets on the next step. Now what's the second half of the verse saying? Ruach necheya mi yisaena. He's saying, well, what about? So that's very good. The first clause says if you have a sick nefesh, your ruach can fix it up. But vima ruach necheya, what if the ruach is broken? shapagam v'kilkel b'chinas ruach ha'idei avonas ha'kluim v'chinas ruach. You damage your ruach through sins that are from the ruach level by speech. The ruach necheya, and a broken spirit, what are you going to do? Oh, there's a real mystical twist. Oh, then what happens? Mi yisa'ena. Doesn't mean the simple meaning, who will bear it, but it means who will bear it. In other words, tikuno, the correction of this sick ruach, al yedei b'chinat ha-neshama, comes through the neshama, shenikres, that's mystically called mi. The neshama is called mi, which means who in English. Kiyadua b'zoris, anyone who knows b'zoris knows this idea. Now think for a minute. Why do we call the neshama, why is another name for neshama, mi, which means who? Who, question mark.
Paradise.
What?
Paradise.
Paradise?
Out of our body.
Is there a concept?
What do you mean?
It's the
well, you don't have to wait for that. It's right now. No, neshama. Neshama is right here now.
It's not
for
work. Tapping into it.
Could be. Could be. It's around. Right? What's the idea? What's the idea?
Who am I? Am I in connection with my neshama?
Well, it's because it's outside, right.
That's the idea. Since the neshama is already so outside and above the identity that we get in this world, so it's called me. It's called who?
But why is it
who is it? My nefesh, it's here. It's me, Yossi. This is it. This is my nefesh. It's right here. My talking. It's me. It's my voice. Right? But when we're talking about the neshama that's outside of you already, right? All right. So who is it? Like in Hebrew, usually we have the word me, right? Mi yodeh. Who knows? Mm. We don't know, but the neshama knows.
But why is it written mem? Yeah.
Oh, that's just. Oh, I don't know. That's just to show you that it's. In and of itself. There's probably a lot of deep things with that. I mean, there are a lot of things where it relates to Bina, all kinds of allusions here, but it's me. So it's interesting, while we're on the topic, so that's neshama. So what do you think the shorish and neshama is called?
What?
Exactly. Who said that?
What?
Very good.
Shorish and
neshama is called ma.
Oh.
It's called what? In other words, by me, the neshama, what? By the neshama, there's a sense of person. Right? The neshama is around you, there's a sense, but it really hasn't yet come into a distinct identity.